Ryan Arshaga joins us from St. Petersburg. Shado, how are you?
I'm good, buddy. Sorry about that. We were just in the middle of shooting on a stop, so I couldn't get to you off the top of the show there.
Buddy, it's all good. Canada, give me your thoughts. They didn't give up a lot of shots. They got outscored 4-0, and they didn't really create a lot of chances either.
No, they didn't. I mean, listen, they had a couple of really good chances early on. Like, this was actually one of their better starts that they've had, believe it or not. But they couldn't cash in. And then, I really think kind of a story within the story here is I thought Canada got thrown off their game. I thought they got preoccupied with, you know, trying to get under Laine's skin, with some of the stuff after the whistle. I mean, guys, you'd never see that from them. Even Connor McDavid was jawing at Laine quite a bit and was getting thrown off his game and frustrated. So this was a game where Canada, they weren't just singularly focused. They got their focus a little split. And, man, I'll tell you, this Laine, like, I got a front row seat for this. And the United States tried to throw that kid off of his game, and he was having nothing to do with that. Canada tried to do the same thing tonight. He almost feeds off of it. Like, it almost is one of those things where it gets him going. And I thought Canada got distracted tonight. And then on top of that, you know, the offense sputters, and Cam had an extremely difficult night. It was not a good showing from Canada at all.
Well, I wonder the fact that they haven't played any real teams for the last week, if maybe they just weren't prepared to play, like a legit contender. Do you think that was it? What was their response afterwards? Why they were flat in all areas of the ice?
Yeah, I mean, and I asked that question to Ryan O'Reilly right after the game. And, you know, it's got to be tough to keep your focus. It's got to be tough to stay focused when you're just rolling over team after team. And this is such a long tournament that, you know, you say, well, you can't let your guard down. Well, yeah, you kind of can, because you're playing against teams where, you know, if your guard isn't up completely, you're probably still going to win. So I think there's probably an element to that. Yeah, I think that they probably played too many games where they were up by too much and didn't play in competitive hockey for quite a long stretch. And then when they needed to rebound, they couldn't. But, you know, there were a couple of times where I thought they were starting to pick up the play, where they were starting to take it back. And Cam just let a couple of really bad goals in that took the wind out of the comeback. And so, you know, and Cam owned it after the game. He admitted it. I mean, there's no, you know, the way he deals with those things. We've heard it in Edmonton. But it was not a good performance from him. And then the team, it just took the wind out of them when they were trying to make their comebacks.
You think there's any chance they go back to Pickard, or is Talbot the guy that they're going to be the main guy in the quarterfinals?
I don't think they're going to go away from Talbot. I mean, if they were thinking about going away from Talbot, then they probably throw Pickard in the third and go, look, let's get this guy into some game action. He might have to go next game, because now he's been sitting on the bench not playing for quite some time. They wanted to give Cam a chance to play his way through it. They stayed with him. And so, I mean, to me, there's just too much separation between the two. I mean, it's not like they've got two guys that are pretty close and it's just a matter of who grabs it. I mean, they know. They clearly came over here with a number one netminder and a clear-cut backup. I mean, they knew that. They had the opportunity to try and add in net if they wanted to. They had the opportunity to bring three if they wanted to, and they didn't. They went a little different with the way they did it this year, a clear number one and a clear number two. And so, as tough a night as Talbot had, I would be surprised if they went away from him for the quarters.
Looking ahead to the quarters, now they got Sweden, correct?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, they'll have Sweden here in a couple of days.
They've moved a few lines around at different times. Now, today, nobody scored, so I'm not sure if Peters will come up with a blender approach again for the next game. But were you surprised, Ryan, at how little attempt it was by the forwards to take the puck to the net? Because Finland, especially when they got up a goal, they're like, hey, you can cycle it around on the perimeter all day long, and eventually you're going to have to take the puck to the net. And they seem to be rather stubborn and not wanting to do that.
Yeah, I think it's a combination. I think it's a combination of, it's not a lack of willingness, but a lack of actually doing it, taking the puck hard to the net, making a hard play, and really driving through the first couple of periods. But I also think Finland just plays a fantastic defensive game, and they make it really difficult. They've got, like, they're a little bit different than the United States. Like, the United States is they're a young team. They've brought a lot of young guys, college players, you know, guys that aren't NHL players on their roster are young. Finland is a little bit different. They have some guys that have played for a long time and played in this tournament many times. And they've got some guys who are experienced in these situations. So they play a really strong team game. And they defensively have been, I haven't seen the other side of the draw. I haven't watched the games, but for my money defensively, I mean, they've been the best team on this side for sure by a stretch. And so I think it's a combination. I don't think Canada had the take it to the net that they needed tonight, but I think Finland had a lot to do with that.
Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us in St. Petersburg. Canada losing 4-0 to the Finns. So now they take on Sweden in the next round. You talked about Cam Talbot struggling, and after the game, he didn't shy away from it. I watched it; he was pretty straightforward in taking the blame. His head coach, though, tried to say, "Hey, this is more than the goaltender." Is that Peters just not wanting to throw his goalie under the bus, or
yeah.
do you think he had some legit beefs with his team?
Oh no, for sure he did. Like, absolutely, he had legit beefs with his team. I think he's probably unhappy on a number of fronts. I mean, their discipline wasn't very good. Their focus wasn't very good. They did too much chirping and pushing and shoving and silly stuff after the whistles. I think it ended up with, you know, anytime you take 5 penalties, the other team only takes 1. I mean, the refs had something to do with that. But I'd say overall, that was the undisciplined play that Canada had. So I think there's a list of stuff for him to be not happy about. He was asked directly about Talbot's game. He wasn't going to fire him under the bus. So he deflected it and said, listen, we dressed 22 guys, 21 of them played in the game. Everybody's got to be better, and, you know, we'll figure it out. It was a very clear attempt to just deflect and not put the blame right on Cam Talbot. So, like, let's be honest, man. Like, 2, if not 3 of those there's no way you can be letting those in high-caliber competition. You just can't. Like, the one rebound that I think was the back-breaking goal was no good. The turnover, like, Cam gets into trouble sometimes when he tries to handle the puck too much.
Yeah.
That definitely happened. This was a really, really tough performance from him. And what it didn't do was allow a team that was struggling to figure out how to play against Finland, didn't give them long enough to figure it out, and it definitely cost them.
Ryan Ellis, what'd you make of his performance?
Yeah, you know what? I like Ryan. Well, I didn't think he was very good tonight. I thought he was turning the puck over and made some mistakes. And, I mean, you can say that about a lot of the Canadian players. But I like the way Ellis moves around out there. He's not the fastest guy, but he gets around good. He's a crisp passer. He's got a bomb from the point. I like him. I think he's a good player. And he definitely fits in the international game. He's experienced internationally. I don't mind him. I mean, I don't think he's the answer to all of the Edmonton Oilers' problems if they were to grab him, but he's definitely a power play defenseman, knows how to run a power play, knows how to move the puck. He's got a good shot. He shoots right. He would be like a third-tier option for them in terms of trying to, fill a hole on the back end.
Oh, are you kidding me? Yeah, he'd be a huge ad. I don't see the Nashville Predators moving him anytime soon. I think they just moved.
But I don't put him in that same category with some of the other guys we're talking about when we talk about the Oilers filling in on the blue line. Like, he would be more, he would come in behind Barry and behind those other guys that we've talked about a lot.
Well, he's not as good offensively as Barry, I don't think, but he's way better defensively.
Yeah, but I don't think Ryan Ellis is a dynamic player. And I think Tyson Barry is dynamic. I think he's a special player. I think he does stuff that's pretty impressive. And I think he's got a real nice high compete level on him too. I like Ellis a lot, but I don't think he's necessarily. I think they need to aim a little higher than that. I say respectfully.
Yeah, well, and that's. Oh, I don't think Ellis is a guy they're looking at number one. But Ellis had 10 goals, man. When a guy who doesn't get a ton of power play time behind Weber and Josi in Nashville. Oh. Right. I just look
That's
at that. I think Ellis is, I think honestly, Barry's become one of the players that many people are overrating in Edmonton. My own opinion on him.
Yeah.
I think he's a very good offensive player.
I don't think so at all.
Yeah, I think he's a very good offensive player, but defensively, he doesn't take on. He can be a second pair guy, which is fine, but he's not close to the money he wants. That's the other thing. Like, his contract demands seem ludicrous.
Well, what's he asking for?
Well, the number out of Colorado from Dater was that he's asking for like 5.5. Not that good defensively, yeah, in my book. Second pair, if you're paying your second pair defenseman $5.5 million, then you're gonna have salary cap problems moving forward.
If he's your first power play, if he's your power play quarterback, your top point getting defenseman at between 35, 45, 50 points a year.
But if he can't play, well, name guys that are like that aren't overpaid. Right? Like, when you look at guys around the league, like Chris Letang takes the tough minutes, right? Duncan, those guys play a lot of minutes. They produce a lot of points. Barry produces a lot of points. He doesn't play the tough matchups. And that's why, to me, he's a second pairing guy. You can't pay him 5.5 because he's not worth it.
Yeah, I don't know. I really like the player, and I think the player is getting better. And I think he's dynamic, and I think over the next few years he's going to turn into an even better player than he is right now. And I think you need to get ahead of the curve on a guy. And I think I think the Oilers are going to chase him hard. I think he'll be, if not their main target, then absolutely one of their couple of main targets. I think there's going to be a really hard push at the draft for them to get him. And I think they're going to pay him if they do. And I think they're going to, I think they're going to invest a lot in trying to make that happen. That's my sense of it, and it's probably what I'd be doing.
Well, we'll see, Shar. It'll be interesting. To me, I'd take Justin Falk over Tyson Barry. Better contract, bigger. Yeah, I'd take Falk for sure.
But I think that's a little different. I mean, Falk is all around. Yeah, I agree with you. If they can get him, but it's Barry and Falk kind of in that same tier. You know, you have a choice between the two. I would say, yeah, you take Falk. But I think it is 1,000 times more likely that Colorado moves on with Barry compared to Carolina moving on with Falk. I think I don't see Carolina moving on with Falk.
Ah, that's fair. Okay, sure. It'll be an interesting one to look at. If you get Barry, but then you're paying him 5.5, to me, he's never going to be a top pairing defenseman because there's very few top pairing defensemen who are 5'10" who match up against the big forwards in the West. I just don't see how it works.
Yeah, well, it's a fair point. A totally fair point, but he's still young and growing into his game too. Like, defensemen come into their own at the mid-late 20s, and he's got some room. And the guy can move, he can shoot, and he competes. And I think you put him with the right player next to him, and I think you can use him a lot.
No, well, there's no doubt about that. A 5-on-5 and, for good matchups at home and stuff like that. I'm leery of overpaying defensemen. That's what crushes you in the salary cap. Like, when you look at the teams that won, you look at what their salary cap is for their second pairing defenseman, right?
Yeah.
And that's why Chicago was able to have depth and won. And the LA Kings, same thing. Like, Jake Muzzin wasn't making huge dollars. Right? Hjalmarsson, who's a fantastic, and I know it doesn't bring any offense, but him and Oduya weren't $4 million guys. They were three, right?
Yeah, but it all has to flesh out in the end. It's all got to be even in the end, right? So let's say Brandon Davidson's a legit top four defenseman on their team next year. Let's say he's their number four, right? Well, if you're getting your number four, what you're paying Brandon Davidson for, does it really matter if you're overpaying your number three by $1.5 million a year?
Well,
it all kind of washes out in the end, right? If you make a couple of good decisions, take a little bit of a hit on a couple other ones because you have to, then the only thing worse than overpaying a defenseman that maybe isn't earning his money is not having a defenseman that can play. And that's where the Oilers are at right now. They don't have enough defensemen that can play. And if overpaying a guy a little bit gets you a usable top two, three defensemen, I don't know, man. We've been watching a brutal decor for too many years. They gotta get something done. And if it costs them a little bit of money or a contract that looks a little heavy, so what? It's been too long where it's been such a massive problem. And if they don't fix it, they're not getting better.
No, I don't discount that part. My only concern is, well, you say Davidson's a number four next year. Great. They're not a cup-contending team next year. Unless somehow he's able to add that much more. Like, they've been the worst team in the NHL for a long time. We hope to God they're a playoff team next year. So in 2 years, when you think they're a playoff contending team, well, that's when Davidson's going to need a new contract anyway, right?
So, yeah, but but they got to get better now. I mean, shying away from Tyson Berry because he might want too much money. If you can get him in a, if you can get him in a deal, and any deal that's going to involve Tyson Berry, they'll have a chance to talk to him. They'll know what that's going to look like. I mean, so what's a better number for Berry? 4.75? Like, so you're 4.75? I mean, he, like, instead of 5.5? So now you're talking $750,000 for a defenseman who potentially could run your power play with Connor McDavid for the next 5 years? Like, this is not the place to be splitting hairs and worrying about $750,000, in my opinion. It's just too important a role to fill.
Shocker, we will see what happens for the Oilers. I like Tyson Berry. To me, it's got to be at the right price, because not only are you paying him, you're gonna have to give up something to get him too, right? That's the other thing.
Yep,
it's not like
he's
not a UFA. He's still an RFA. So you'd have to make the trade. And if I'm Colorado, honestly, I'm not sure I'm trading him in the West.
Yeah, well, yeah, and that's a really good point. Why trade him into the West? You take your best deal you've got coming from the East, so you don't have to worry about him. Because, you know, that guy can come back and bite you for years to come. He's got that kind of potential. But there are not many teams who can put the type of player on the table that the Edmonton Oilers can.
No, that's fair. So you're saying you would trade Everly or Nugent Hopkins for Tyson Berry?
Yes.
Which one?
I would trade, it would have to be Everly plus, and it would have to be, it would be close to straight up on the Nugent Hopkins front. I think that would be pretty close to straight up, but it would have to be Everly plus, I think, to get him.
Shauger, get some rest in St. Petersburg, Canada, hoping for a much better effort Thursday in the quarters against Sweden. We appreciate your time.
Okay, buddy. Take care.